Welcome to Growing Pains, a business podcast for entrepreneurs and their teams who find themselves in the growth phase or messy middle in between startup and aiming for six or seven figures and beyond. I'm your host, Laurie Sterling, a COO, coach and mentor. I both do what I teach and teach what I do with a passion for empathetic team leadership, business operations and all things entrepreneurship.
Hey, welcome everyone. Today I have a brand new guest. This is Alexis Kingsbury. And Alexis is an award-winning entrepreneur with two software businesses and a consulting practice serving over 600 organizations around the world, including well-known brands such as Sony, 3M, I'm not even sure if I know how to pronounce that.
Swarovski.
There we go. Fitness First and Pepsi. Alex is passionate about helping business leaders create freedom to spend time on what matters most. And that is so aligned with what I do as well. Welcome, Alex. How are you?
Yeah, it's great to be here, Laurie. Thank you very much for having me. And I've got to reconsider whether well-known brands include Swarovski. Clearly, you're not a fan of the jewelry.
Sorry,
or the glitz. Yeah, no, my wife is very big into the bling. So perhaps that's why I'm more used to it. You know, they do these pens with like Swarovski crystals in them and so on. So hashtag not spawn, but are a customer of one of my businesses. So, you know, I'll help them. Yeah. My help.
Well, thank you for coming on. I wanted to interview you because you have a bit of a unique insight. Yes, you're one of the, in your own right, a CEO of your business and are very successful, but you also come from an operations side where you've come from helping businesses back end and like being able to extract them from the doing of their business. And ultimately, that has brought you to designing your own SaaS, software as a service business. So how did all of that start?
Yeah, so I suppose you could probably roll it all the way back to when I was like early teens, right? Because I've, and even before that, like I was always building things, often out of like lemonade bottles and sticky tape and so on. Like I just loved the practice of building something that didn't exist before. And when I got given my first computer and started to have a play, I loved the fact that I could build things using the computer, building websites in the very early days of, you know, websites when it was all pink or black backgrounds and dancing babies and spinning GIFs and all this kind of stuff, which most people won't remember now. But like, that was where I first started like building online businesses and so on. And I've just always loved, I've always been passionate about like that process of building something, but I really struggle to build the business beyond anything than just me. So even when I was like 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, and I was washing cars to earn money or doing gardening or selling, writing and then selling newsletters and things, it would go quite well. I'd spend a load of time doing the sales part and then I'd find myself really busy and then find that I couldn't grow it any further and I could never work out how to grow the business beyond just me. So I went to university, studied management science, where I thought, well, that'll teach me like this is how you build and grow a business. And I didn't get the points from that allowed me to do it. So even when I was then at university, building computers and selling computers to local businesses, providing IT support to the students on and off campus, I was still like building businesses while I was at uni and still couldn't grow it beyond just me. So I became a management consultant, working with a London-based consulting firm. Working with large organizations like AstraZeneca and Honda and BP and governments and so on. And it was there that I was helping them solve their biggest issues, particularly relating to processes. So I was helping them to transform parts of their business by documenting and improving their processes. In many cases, like reducing whole departments need for people from like 20 people down to 3 or something just by doing process improvements. And I loved that in terms of how kind of logical and interesting that was and how much impact you could have, particularly when it wasn't resulting in redundancies. And actually it meant that those people could do greater things and add more value in the organization. So I really, really enjoyed that. But it was also there that I learned how what you need is people and processes. You've got to build a team within the business and then give them the guidance and the processes so that they can do great things consistently. And when you do that, that's when your business can grow and excel and so on. So I learned that lesson there and I thought, great, I now know what I need to do. And so after a few years there, I left and started a business with my now business partner that I've been in business with for now 13 years. And he was also the consultancy, but on the software development side. We always wanted to build a software business. We talked about it, you know, over drinks on a regular basis that we one day would like to build software businesses and decided why not do this together. So we started initially a consulting practice together to give us the time and the money to work out what we're doing with the software business, and then started the software business. And what was funny, well, didn't feel funny at the time, is that we thought that it would be not easy, but a bit easy. So we thought pretty quickly that we'd be able to create a product that would appeal to the market and that would then be able to iterate on little aspects of it to remove the bottlenecks and make it successful. Perhaps within a year or two, we'd get, you know, that sort of hockey stick growth and everything would be great. And it just took so long. And so that wasn't quick and we had to pivot a lot. And when we finally did pivot that business, so that's our first software business together with SpiderGouch, so 360 degree feedback tool, but it didn't start off life as a 360 feedback tool. It started as a much broader kind of survey application, rivaling like SurveyMonkey. When we pivoted and focused on that 360 degree feedback employee development space, that's when we started to really see some growth. And using my experience from working with other businesses and sorting out processes and so on, we're able to start to put in the structures in place to make that business grow. But we still made major mistakes when it came to hiring and delegating and so on. And for quite a while, we're sort of stuck into the business. And then we had some pretty major issues or mistakes where, for example, I hired a salesperson who, you know, was expensive, senior salesperson who had done £1 million worth of sales for a similar HR software application the year before. And I thought, well, fantastic, he's going to come in and do us £1 million worth of revenue in the next 12 months. You know, good news. And of course, that's not what happened. He couldn't even outsell the results I'd been getting, like with the 1 or 2 days a week of selling that I was doing. And so that was really painful because, of course, you don't find that out in days or weeks. It takes months. And so by the end of that, that nearly broke us financially, but also mentally and with our relationships as well. Like, we were not fun to be around during that period because we were very stressed and frustrated and weren't sure whether maybe it was the hire that we had made, but hang on, they'd got all this experience and we had worked so hard on it. And so we kind of concluded that we hadn't given enough of a sales process and the guidance, which was on me, and ridiculous because you might look at it and say, well, Alexis, you had all that experience of building processes at other businesses. Did you not think to create the process for your salesperson? And honestly, it's because I thought he'll know so much more than me about sales. Mm-hmm. How could I possibly give him a sales process that and so I kind of thought, well, he'll do that.
Yeah.
And I've learned that over and over again. Every time I'm tempted to assume, and there are business leaders that have said to me, like, oh, this is you know, yes, process has its place, but often you've just got to get the right person in and give them the space to do their work. And I find that such an attractive prospect. And I'm sure that people have got examples where they've been able to see that happen and do that and so on. And yet, my experience, nearly without exemption to this, both in my own businesses, but working with many, many others, is that if you don't provide them the guidance that they need, the processes, the operations and the structures, it takes a very, very long time for them to deliver the performance that you want. And even when they've got the amazing skills and so on, if they don't understand how the business works to make it successful, like how your business currently sells, how it currently delivers, the chances are that you won't get a consistent result. And so learning those sorts of experiences and lessons live was incredibly painful, but has been transformational because once we learned those, we were able to put them into our business And it enabled it to A, the growth increased, but also B, it allowed myself and my co-founder to remove ourselves operationally from the software business, our first software business, SpiderGap. And as a result, we've been able to then set up another software business, Air Manual, which we dedicate all of our time to. Like, we're not required operationally in our other business. We spend, you know, we're able to take 6 weeks plus holiday out of business generally because we have the processes and so on in place that they're able to run. But so you can see on that journey, like, I've been involved a lot in business operations, whether it's learning at university, doing it in my own little businesses, doing it on bigger businesses, doing it as a consultant, and yet keep on having these really big learnings around how it works. It's a seemingly simple area that is anything but.
And most business owners, like, when they come up with something like that, would just, like, pack up the business and say, well, it didn't work. What are we going to do now? And
but that's what I'd basically done in all those startups when I was a teenager, right? Like, the, you know, the reason that it's quite a long list of washing cars and newsletters and selling newspapers. And what was the other one that I did? Oh, I had a PlayStation fan site. And I had, building computers, IT support, selling headsets was another one. That was when, like, voice over IP was growing. There was another one that I did. Oh, yeah, I did, designs on computers. Like, I'd spray paint it. That was awful. That went so badly. I could talk a lot about how terrible that was, in so many failures in that business. I think I had one customer and had to refund them in full. But, like, every so often I'll count it up, and there's a question over each one. Do you count it in now? I think I've probably had 10 to 15 businesses, right, over the course of my life and career. And one of the things I learned early on was, actually, maybe it's not the business model. Mm-hmm. Like, the assumption of, oh, well, like, one of the earliest ones was, I was, like, washing cars and mowing the villagers' lawns. And I remember one particularly nasty job where I had to clear out someone's stream and pulling out all the pondweed and so on. And the problem, like, I had stopped doing that business. I mean, at the time I was basically a child, but, like, in my eyes at the time, certainly it was a business. I stopped in that business because I decided I couldn't scale it. Like, it wasn't a scalable model. Whereas now I look back at it and go, it totally was. There's loads of ways in which that could have been scaled. It's just that I was completely blinkered in my thinking as to the role that I needed to play in it. Yeah. And that's kind of a common feature, I suppose, both for my career, but I think for a lot of business leaders, is the misunderstanding or the myth around what role they need to play in their business. Like, the nature of what we now do at Air Manual, where we're helping business leaders free up their time, reduce mistakes, get people onboarded faster by documenting their processes, giving their teams the guidance that they need. Guess what? One of the most common things I hear from business leaders when we're talking about, like, delegating something and so on is like, oh, but I need to be the one that does that, right? Or it'll be faster if I do that myself. Like, those are incorrect statements that hold us back fundamentally from growth, because that's almost never true.
Yeah. And how can I delegate 30 years of experience, yeah, to the next person? But
yeah. And of course, when you frame it up like that, it is an impossible problem. How do I delegate, as you say, how do I delegate 30 years of experience? Yeah. And the answer is, yeah, you can't. You can't delegate 30 years of experience. In the same way as I think I see a lot of business leaders who think, oh, I just need to hire a mini me. I need to hire a clone of myself. It's like, well, you won't find them. Like, unless you've got some long lost twin who happened to also go down a journey of entrepreneurship and starting businesses, but for some crazy reason has decided that despite all of those skills and passion, they now don't want to work for themselves. They want to work for a business owner, and they want to not be paid very much. So that, like, they don't exist. And so instead, what you have to do in reality is parcel up the roles that you play as the business leader, and you can delegate those as long as you provide the guidance and so on, as I experienced painfully. That's myself. Right.
We can distill that knowledge and we can divide it, like, divide and conquer.
Exactly right. Yeah. What you can't do is go, oh, just this perfect person that does all of the things that I can do, but better, or even just as well as I can do. Whereas you absolutely can find people that can do parts of your role. So whether it's, yes, you can find someone who can be more diligent in the follow-up of sales than you are. And so if you give them the process for how do you have a sales conversation with a customer? What questions do you ask them that result in them saying yes and becoming a customer that you've done within your business? That absolutely can be passed to someone else. But don't also expect that they're going to come up with your next marketing slogan, be the designer on your product and 100 other things in your business that you currently do. But there's no truth to say that you're the only person that can do the myriad of things that people would add that phrase to. The reality is that nearly anything in your business can be delegated. The question is only about timing. It's when you need to do that in your business.
Mm. And how long have you been running Air Manual for?
Yeah, so Air Manual is now about 2 years by this point, just over. So as I say, been in business with Paddy for 13 years of those, I think 11 or 12 of them with one our other software business with Spider Gap, and then Air Manual is the newer business now. It's gone really, really quickly, but yeah, it's just coming up for just over 2 years. So, and that's been great because we've been able to apply everything that we learned from our previous software business, and as a result, move a lot quicker. I've at various points, I've kind of checked some of our key milestones and for comparison. And at the moment, I think we're at 3 to 4 times faster on most of the milestones, and at least twice as fast on others. So I like to think that we've learned quite a bit from our experience and been able to apply it.
Yeah. So in 2 years, what has been the success of your business? What does that look like?
Yeah. So for Air Manual specifically, you know, software is an often challenging industry in that although everyone likes the idea of owning a software business because you look at it and go, oh, brilliant, recurring revenue. Like, you know, that feels like so low stress. And some of that is true. Like I literally run a podcast, De-Stress Your Business, because we're big into how do you reduce the stress. But actually there's a lot of stresses that having a software business comes with that people don't talk about. So for example, IT security and incident response and uptime and all these sorts of things that, you know, just from the technology standpoint, and then your code base and dealing with legacy frameworks that go out of date and getting the people, developers that know how to use those frameworks, and then them working on old code and not knowing how to work on someone else's code, and automated testing and breaking things that they didn't mean to, and all these sorts of things. And that's before you even go into the whole cash flow picture of building a software business, which basically looks like you spend a lot of time and money up front with the hope that one day you get that back. And there are ways in which you can increase the likelihood that that's going to happen by using kind of lean methodologies to basically build it and test it and get it in front of customers and get their commitment early on. But even with that, like, there's still significant time and money that goes in at the beginning, always with the ever-present risk that at some point competitor action, or just that you can't quite distill the market enough to generate revenue. So I go into the software industry with eyes open, with based on previous experience, but feel really proud of where we've got to with Air Manual, where we have got a product that is now used by, I think it's about 100, must be coming up for 100 organizations, helping them to, you know, sort out their processes and so on. But I think the thing that I probably feel most pleased about is one of the things that we learned late with Spider Gap was around customer retention. We kind of knew that, yeah, you know, happy customers, that's important. So look after them, do a good product, great. But over the years, what I learned is particularly around the metrics of customer retention and how important understanding and using those are, and the extent to which your business model and the nature of your product and so on can limit your potential customer retention heavily. So for example, for Spider Gap, that's a product that is typically used by organizations once a year to do a 360 feedback project, which presents quite a bit of risk for a SaaS business, because it means that the risk is, what if in that course of that year, priorities change, people change, you know, the head of HR moves on or whatever, and then you come around a year again and they either just don't run the project because they don't think about it, or they go off to the market and find another tool. Or in some cases, we even have customers who maybe they're not even thinking that this is an annual thing. They're thinking of doing it as a one-off as part of a leadership program. And the problem is those things kind of build churn into the business, which can be problematic when you're trying to improve your retention. So one of the things I'm really proud of with Air Manual is very, very early on, when we started picking up our first customers, they would, you know, I'd show them what we could do and they go, oh my God, Alexis, this is exactly what I need in my business. I need documented processes. I need onboarding well documented. I need this structure so that everyone knows what they need to do and they don't make mistakes and so on. Perfect. Set me up an account. We'd create the workspace. And then 2 to 4 weeks later, they have done nothing. And so if I hadn't had that experience previously, I may not have even checked, right? I'd have just been like, right, they say they're happy. Because that's the other thing is if I check in with them, they would just say, oh yeah, sorry, yeah, been busy, but I'm definitely going to be onto it. And again, most sane people just go, okay, fair enough, and then move on and sell more. Great news.
Yeah.
But based on my previous experience, that makes me really uncomfortable for two reasons. One is I know that long-term, that's going to be terrible for churn. Like those people are not just going to keep on paying the money and going, oh yeah, but I'll get to it. Like they will churn and that's it creates a long-term problem in the business. Secondly, it doesn't align with my number one core value, which is focus on impact. Mm-hmm. I am all about what is the impact, the result, the benefit that we deliver. And I find it absolutely toxic if we have even a few, but particularly large numbers of customers where we know that they're not getting the value and the impact, despite the fact that they're spending money. Like, I don't like that. And everyone we hire has got that core value as well. And so it's common in our business. I'll have team members who say, I'm really concerned about this particular customer that, you know, da, 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 da. They're paying us, but that's not the issue. The issue is we're worried that they're not going to get enough value because they keep on putting off this meeting or they haven't roped in this senior stakeholder or whatever. And so a lot of our mental energy is spent on how to make sure that happens. And so early on with Air Manual, we didn't gloss over that. We dug in deeper and deeper and deeper. And that resulted in us realizing that it's not just about providing the software when it comes to helping businesses with this problem. It's about providing the approach. And yeah. So it was that we then kind of developed in the business is this end-to-end approach of how do you delegate more effectively? How do you free up your time? How do you remove key person dependency? How do you stop those mistakes? How do you get people up to speed faster and delivering value and do that without it being this massive overwhelming exercise? And that was not an easy thing to solve and work out, but we did do it and have now got customers who, you know, we bring them in and we don't just set them up with a workspace and go, good luck. We take them through a process to make sure that they're going to actually get the impact. And that's what I love. And I guess as a result, the short answer, sure, it's very long, but the short answer to your question becomes the milestones, the achievements that I'm most proud of from the 2 years at Air Manual so far are the stories. It's the case of like Georgia Kirk, who owns a fantastic business, Write Business Results, helps people to publish their books, helping her to get to a position where she could both hire and grow faster because she was hitting bottlenecks in her business. But more importantly, when sadly her father passed away and she wanted to step out of the business to grieve and support her mum and so on. You know, you want to be able to do that in those moments in your life. She was able to because the rest of the business were able to cover in her absence because they had got the processes and the onboarding in place, despite the fact she had a new joiner that very week, right? A guy called Chris had come in. Like that's for a lot of business owners, they would end up having to juggle those things. That's not something you want to have to juggle. And so it's those things in the journey of Air Manual that I'm most proud of, pleased about, versus perhaps with Spider Gap, it was more about the big customer names and the revenue values and profit milestones and so on.
That's great. And delegation isn't just like a one-off activity that happens. Oh, new software, we'll delegate everything, put everything in there. It actually becomes an ongoing habit because your business continues to grow. There'll be more areas and avenues in the business that usually as the owner of the business, you're the one investigating and checking it out and creating that new system. As you get things off your plate, you go and find something else to do. That builds your business even more. You now need to take that off your plate and build it. So to constantly be using that software would be important in that piece.
Yeah, exactly right. And as you say, it's a sort of cyclical process. You know, I often think about entrepreneurship as kind of just being a two-step process, nice and simple, two-step process. Step one, find out what works. So it's like, okay, you know, can I pitch this product in this particular way? Can I find potential customers via this particular marketing channel? Can I make a sale by asking these questions and saying these things? And the problem is that in my early part of my entrepreneurial career, I was basically repeating step one over and over and over and over.
Yes.
And the mistake is that at some point you have to move to step two, which is once you've worked out what works, then set it up so that it can happen and you can free up your time so that you can do more of step one.
Yeah.
So for example, like working out how do you set up your sales and marketing system and people and whatever so that you're not now slammed on sales conversations, mm-hmm. which means that you can then work out, oh, okay, now my new problem is how do I deliver for all of these new sales? Yes. Okay, so that's, I need to work out what works there. Is it that I can I use contractors? Do I need to hire someone? Can I automate this? Okay, now I've worked out how to make this work. Again, move to step two, get that systemized so that it stays working while you then move back to another step one. How can I generate more market, more leads, or how can I improve cash flow? Like that's mm-hmm. the game, is moving from one state to the other. The mistake is getting stuck in one for too long, and really, success comes from your ability to switch between those steps or those states quickly. But it's, if you don't do that, then yeah, you don't grow the business. But it's interesting, as you say, like the process of freeing up yourself and to delegate is a cyclical one as well, because the nature of the work you do and the value of it is relative.
Yeah.
So for like early on in my business career, for me, a low value activity might be very basic admin, right? Like doing, you know, basic bookkeeping or even not even that, but literally typing stuff into spreadsheets to help us update dashboards or whatever. Mm-hmm. High value for me was having sales conversations, like yeah. converting sales. As the business grew, I got to a point where actually I'm having lots of sales conversations, but it's one-to-one selling. Mm-hmm. And actually I need to be growing the business. I need to be hiring people and developing people and structuring the people, you know, and all these sorts of things. And so sales became like a medium value task.
Yeah.
And so then you get to the point where it's like, oh, actually I need to hire a salesperson, delegate that. And then, you know, well, I've built sales teams and so on. And then my high value task becomes coaching, training the sales team, understanding the metrics and so on. And like, you know, and then over time, even that becomes medium or low value. And it's interesting that now, for example, I was even think about it yesterday morning out for a run. I was thinking about what am I currently considering the activities that are value adding for me? And it's presenting, it's speaking on fantastic podcasts like yours. It's having conversations with people about strategic partnerships and potential joint ventures. So it's bigger strategic things. And actually it's funny, it's because it's been an evolving process. I was thinking, actually how little of activity I spend on the things that even 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, I'd have regarded as the absolute high value tasks for me, like, you know, individual sales and so on, and how my time on that is, it can now be rounded to zero. And I think that's the key, is that asking yourself on a regular basis, what are my low, medium and high value activities? And how, and therefore, how do I reduce my time on low value activities to, because they will then, you know, your time will get sucked up by the other stuff in the medium and high columns if you can get rid of the stuff in the low. And so, but that, know that that's not a one-off activity. The great thing is that do it again 3 months later and you'll have a new list and can keep on repeating that exercise.
So how many team members do you have in your business at the moment?
I think across all my active businesses, I think we're 17, 18, something like that.
Oh, that's great. And how many hours do you work?
So typically, I'd probably say it's 40 hours a week, but sometimes it's more like 37 and a half. So it's probably in that kind of ballpark. And it's funny because I have to remind myself sometimes that A, isn't the norm for business leaders, and B, is not where I was always. you know, in the early days, I was working crazy hours. In fact, if I think back to my university days and even prior to that, like I enjoyed, but I would work like well late into the evenings and I'd work the weekends. It's very much my hobby, and I would do business building stuff at the expense of pretty much everything else in terms of relationship building and exercise and so on. And actually had to take a pause on doing businessy stuff in my final year of university because I had to make a decision on, am I going to actually do well at uni or am I going to really cause myself a problem? And decided, you know what, it's 1 year, let me do this and then I'll switch back. And so, yeah, it's been an interesting experience. It says that. But in those periods, I have worked huge numbers of hours. And actually, even in the early days of Spider Gap, I remember working some pretty antisocial hours, particularly when, you know, we were doing a new release of the software, you know, things that people don't tell you about in a software business, doing a release on a Friday night for a major issue that a customer was having. The developers had got it all lined up. It just needed to release and test. I was supporting the testing. So I'd kind of got all the automated and manual tests ready to go. And so we did the release and then I run the test and it fails. Aww. And so I then tell them da da da, and they re-release, and it fails, and you re-release, and you fail, and then you try and like roll back, and that still fails, and they are ah, and it's at that point, it's at that point. What now I would do is, firstly, we don't do releases on Fridays, but secondly, if that did end up happening, I'd do some serious expectation setting around it with the people around me. I didn't at that time. I remember a particular occasion where I ended up sat in bed next to my, fortunately now wife, but at the time it was going to be ex-girlfriend because she was planning on kicking me out based on this experience pretty much on its own, because I was sat there with my laptop working crazy hours and we'd been busy trying to get this release ready. And now I'm sat there in bed going, oh yeah, nearly done. And then, oh, the release has failed again. The guys now need to re-prepare this and then I need to retest it and so on. Mm-hmm. And so that went on until, I don't know, maybe midnight, but that's 2.5 hours of her sat there or lying there with me next to her with a laptop that, as I say, nearly precipitated the end of our relationship. Yeah. But fortunately, I heard through a friend her version of events and how she experienced that and realized, yeah, I need to completely change how I'm living and working. And so since then, have never worked in bed, but also crucially, like now that we've got two kids and so on, when they get home, I'm always done by 6, typically by 5 or 5:30. And I run them in school every morning and all these things and don't work at the weekend unless very rare circumstances. So and like, that's come about through that experience.
Weeks off and things like that.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, yeah. So I'm talking about working weeks there. Myself, my business partner and everyone that works for us do 40 days holiday per year.
Oh, wow.
So, and we took that view because that's significantly more than most businesses, but and particularly for some of our staff in like the US where, you know, having any holiday at all is surprising, but like certainly more than 20 days is really unusual. So to have 40 days is like bonkers. Like when we first hire people, in fact, most people who first join our organization in the first year of employment, one of the weird things for them is like, how do I even use 40 days of holiday? we talk about the 3-week club of people who have taken their first ever 3-week holiday, because most people when they join us have never had a 3-week holiday before. But when you've got, you know, eight weeks to take, you quickly work out that a 3 or 4 week holiday is a good thing to have in the year. But we set it up that way because we knew that for us, we wanted that kind of flexibility as business leaders. Like, don't you want that? Do you want the ability to have holidays and just long breaks? But then we thought, well, if we want that, why would we want everyone to work underneath us? Like, you know, blood, sweat and tears so that we can have that life that doesn't feel right. And so we put that in place in our business to set that up. So yeah, it's a really important thing for us is work-life balance. And in fact, our fifth core value is enjoy the journey. You know, we're all about not waiting for one imaginary day in the future where suddenly everything's great and, oh yeah, you know, this asset I've built suddenly pays off. Because in my experience, that doesn't happen. Like even earlier today, I was talking to a business owner. She'd built a business with 12 team members of staff over a course of 10 years, you know, significant business, looking at investment and potential sale of shares and so on. And through a series of sad events, has had to liquidate the business. So I know that those things happen. Like I know so many business owners where those sorts of things have happened by, in many cases, by not by their own action, it's by outside influence. So you don't want to be waiting for the, oh, but then one day I'll be able to put my feet up and rest on the beach. You need to be enjoying it along the way. So hence working normal working hours and having additional bonus type holiday, 40 days holiday, is really important to being able to do that, I believe.
Right. So tell me about Paddy and like the relationship that you have both being co-director of your business. Is there somebody who sort of steps up more as the operations side since that's sort of both your backgrounds, you're both in software? What does that look like at the moment?
Yeah, it's kind of changed over time and in the early days a little bit organically, but then we got much better at being very clear on what are the roles and responsibilities and who's doing what. So for a long time, we've been co-CEOs, which means that we're both responsible for setting the strategic direction for the company, shaping the culture, and defining what's the kind of financial investment that we're making and the numbers we're expecting. So that's something that we always have to do at the very top level. And in my experience, whenever we're not aligned on that, it normally just means that we need to spend more time together. And when we do and we chat stuff over, normally we realize that, yeah, we're, you know, we're both smart people. We come out with the same answer given enough time. So that works really well. But then you've kind of got the COO type role within our businesses. And at various points for each of our businesses, we've each held that role. And it's varied based on the other priorities of the company. So, for example, when there's been times where sales and marketing was a really big focus, I've typically been the kind of sales and marketing person or head of sales and marketing. So I've tended to focus on that. And then Paddy's kind of stepped into that COO role. Whereas there've been other times where we've had to do a big push on some of the design and engineering, and that's where Paddy excels. And so therefore I've taken over the COO role there. For SpiderGap, we've actually got to a point where, you know, we've now got a COO that we've promoted from someone that we hired back in 2018, worked in various roles in the business, and is absolutely awesome. Now runs that business day to day, making great decisions, and even with the rest of that leadership team, with the head of engineering, head of product, setting what are our objectives and key results for the coming quarter, 6 months, etc. And myself and Paddy now essentially act as coaches and just review that. So we review it and go, yeah, you're right that this lines up against this 3-year picture that we set. And to some extent, our role becomes just setting, this is the vision, right? This is the 3 years from now, this is what the business will look like. Go do that. So now essentially we're CEOs for that business, but not holding any other roles in it.
So what was the tipping point to actually put somebody in that role externally for you?
Yes, there are a few factors. I think for us, a big part of it was that we were working on like another software business. Uh-huh. And so it heavily incentivized us to be like, right, the more time that we can free up from our other software business, the better. And particularly if we, you know, if we don't feel like we're adding as much value there. But it's hard because when you've got a 7-figure business, there's a, you know, a few levers that you can pull that can make big differences. So there's always a good argument to say, actually, no, you do need to be active in that business. So for quite a while, I kind of held on to the COO role there, but really, you know, I'd let go of all my finance tasks and HR stuff, and really, it was one of the last things to go. But it helped that I'd been developing and coaching my now COO for quite a few years before that point. And I think that's something that's really put us in good stead, is always having a good process for performance management and development of our teams. And it means that we're always asking them, you know, what are your career goals? And I remember the first time that my now COO said to me that his career goal is one day he'd like to be the COO. And I remember, because I think it's so funny, at the time I was thinking, oh, you know, thank God for that. Like, that's kind of what I was hoping too. Oh, and yet at the time he was going, oh, I'm not, you know, I hope this is okay for me to write this, but this is, So I'd like, because I, you know, I don't want you to feel like I'm taking your job and da-da-da. And so how funny is that, right? And it's a good reminder for all of us as business leaders is that we might automatically think that you've got people underneath you who are just ambitious and kind of want this job and whatever. And therefore, delegating to them is, you know, just a case of it'll get pulled. But actually, it's not the case. They may even, as in this case, may even worry that taking stuff off you is stepping on your toes.
Yeah.
If that's the case and you're wanting to delegate and free up your time and be more strategic and work on your business rather than in it, or, you know, get more free time, whatever, be cognizant of that. Like, they're not your team, even smart team members like mine, who, you know, I trust enough and is smart enough to run a seven-figure business, even they like worry about that stuff. And so you've got to be really proactive around identifying the activities and mentoring and coaching your staff so that they can take them on, and providing them the guidance so that they can take the responsibilities off you, and so on over time.
And if you can't provide like that next step in their career, then they're going to look elsewhere and you're going to lose a fantastic team member.
Absolutely. And so wherever I can, I've always tried to keep it as open as possible. I remember hiring someone who essentially joined as a customer success representative. So I became account manager. So essentially like sort of sales type role and customer success role. And I remember in one of my coaching calls with her as part of our performance reviews, she said that she's interested in learning more about finance. So I said, well, fantastic. I can absolutely get you involved, more involved in finance. And so I started like, and documenting and handing over, many of which were already documented, but handing over these finance processes I was doing, you know, accounts payable, chasing payments, bank reconciliations, and so on. And it was awesome because suddenly I was freeing up like a day a week of my time. And she was like, she'd carved it out of like her role and was able to fit it in around her other responsibilities, and loved getting that insight into that part of the business that otherwise she wouldn't, which then was really helpful for her to bring back into the sales and support team and customer success team with that understanding of finance. And that was based on her own interest. And that I used that particular example because that's an example of sideways growth. I think people assume that when you want to provide people more opportunities so that they can grow in their role and whatever, that it's always like very linear vertical ascension in the company, and that, you know, you've got to have a manager, you know, become a manager. In her case, she didn't want to become a manager. She didn't want to manage people. She'd done that in a previous role. It had some bad consequences, which is nothing to do with her. It was entirely due to the lack of processes that they had around people management and so on that didn't support her. But as a result, like, you know, people don't necessarily just want to move up, but they do want growth.
Yeah,
there are the two main reasons that people leave jobs is that they don't get on with their manager or they're not growing.
Exactly.
And I think both of those are really down to bad processes. Like if you don't get on with your manager, that's normally either down to bad recruitment, you got, you know, poor alignment of values, but actually often it's that you're not having the effective conversations with your manager. You're not having weekly one-to-ones. You're not having performance review conversations. And as a result, you don't appreciate your manager and feel that maybe your manager doesn't appreciate you. Whereas when you've got the right things in there, it makes it effective. But particularly growing people is so important.
You're micromanaging people and you're not aligning with expertise and appreciating the value. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. And so I think when you put that in place, when you're supporting people and through those sorts of processes in your business, you get amazing results, both in terms of their ability to perform and do more, but also in terms of reducing churn as well. Like, you know, we're in a position now that ever since we changed our ways of working since 2018, we've not had any regretted losses now, which is awesome, right?
All right. I've got one more question because we do got to wrap things up. But what's next for you? What are your dreams and goals and visions for your business?
Yeah. So for me now, it's all about helping business leaders to free up their time, reduce the mistakes, ultimately reduce the stress in their businesses for them and for their teams. And so the ways that we're doing that, obviously we do have Air Manual as a software product and so on to support that, but we're also doing it through the podcast, De-Stress Your Business, doing it through speaking at events. In fact, Laurie, I think you've seen me speak at 2 events now, which is awesome. And thank you for your engagement on those. So, you know, speaking at events is something I absolutely love doing. There's a few events coming up later this year. I think I had my biggest audience 4 weeks ago, which is like 500, but I'm looking forward to tipping that into over 1,000 before the year is up. So looking forward to speaking at more events, doing more podcasts, and just finding more opportunities to help people understand or overcome some of those obstacles to thinking, oh, you know, I can't grow the business, or it needs to be me, or I need to just get through this busy, stressful period, and then somehow magically on the other side, things will get better. Like, it doesn't work that way. And unfortunately, you know, I talk to so many business leaders where working all hours on their business, feeling stressed, whatever, has huge impacts on their health, their relationships, their and holds back their business. And yet it doesn't need to be that way. And so that's what I'm really, really enjoying, kind of showing people a better approach to doing that. One of the things that we are doing, which I'm really enjoying as well, is we've been writing a series of guides, like ebooks and so on.
Oh, yeah.
So we did one on Business Leaders Guide on using AI and ChatGPT, which people can find at emmanuel.link/AI/ebook, which is all about, like, how do you take the stress out of AI in this big fear area? And then the next one that we're releasing within the next few days, actually, is all around cash flow. Like, how do you use processes to improve cash flow in a business, which is another great source of stress, which is available at emmanuel.link/cashflow/ebook. And, you know, we're doing webinars around these sorts of things. And I love this. Like, I love getting time with business leaders to talk about the stress that this stuff causes, and then how to remove it, and seeing the results in the business. I think for me, it's all about that impact that we can have, because ultimately it's, when you make time for what matters most, you get huge impact out the end.
That's right. I mean, how do business owners make more impact in their business? By impacting more people, but also making sure that they have space to be able to do that, and that is delegating.
Exactly right. Yeah. And that space has to be both in your calendar through freeing up the free delegation and so on, but also in your mind. You know, if you're spread too thin, if you're having to deal with too many issues, if you've just got the stress of issues and cash flow, or just general worries, or having to do everything, or key person dependency, it's very difficult to be strategic and to think bigger and to think a really effective way. So I think that's the key, is creating that space.
It is. So how can people follow you and your journey? What's the best platform?
Yeah, so people can find out more about me at alexiskingsbury.com. There they can find links to my blog, to all of my various businesses, and also it's got links to my social media pages as well. You can find me on mainly active on LinkedIn, but also on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and a little bit on Twitter. Yeah, so people can connect with me there, send me messages, etc. Yeah, perhaps join me on one of my webinars. I tend to run weekly webinars. I've got a webinar series that I run pretty much each week on how to free up 15 hours a week and unlock growth. Then people can find that at airmanual.co/webinar. So connect with me, send me a message. I'd love to hear from people. I love hearing people's stories, either the good ones about the impact that they've been able to have by implementing processes and so on, or more often the pains that they've had. And those sad are useful for us to really connect with the impact this kind of stuff can have. So please do share with me, like, where are you at right now? Where are you trying to get to? What's holding you back? And I'll do my best to point out resources that can help.
Excellent. We will have those links in the show notes, but thank you everyone for listening today. And thank you to Alexis for joining me today. If you are a CEO and you would love to help someone in your own team to level up and become a COO through level up their leadership, strategic management skills, then please get in touch either by email or social media for a prospectus on my 8-week digital COO accelerator. So in the meantime, have a productive day.